large portion of Americans don't have a bank account. They keep their money cash. I saw how I grew up and how my friends grew up, and I saw that there was a huge disconnect between the banks and the communities that they should be outreaching. What I'm really passionate about is helping the unbanked and the underbanked. It costs them more not to have a bank account.
Hey, it's Nate DeSaro, and welcome to Titans of Industry, the podcast where I talk to industry leaders and innovators who are at the top of their game and leading the pack in their fields, uncovering some of the best stories in today's business landscape. In this episode, I sit down with Miguel Lopez, the Chief Community Officer at Encore Bank and a board member of multiple community organizations. Miguel talks about being a first-generation immigrant from Mexico and how education was his ticket to a great life, how serving his community and encouraging diversity has become one of his greatest passions, and how he's part of a leadership team that has been referred to as the Avengers of Banking. I also want to say congratulations to Miguel on being selected in the inaugural class of the Future 50 Business Leaders in Arkansas, an honor that multiple guests on this podcast have been selected into. And now let's get to the episode. But before we do, our team at Content Titan wants you to know that we understand the challenges business leaders and marketers are facing right now with moving to a more virtual world. We are experts in taking human connections and turning them digital. From virtual events and video presentations to promotional content and advertising, we are here to help guide you through the process of staying in front of your audience and making your life a little bit easier. People tell us all the time that they are lost and don't know what to say or do, and we exist to help your business continue to move forward virtually. So if you're ready to take your business and content strategy virtual, our Titans are ready to help. Let's get your business back to business. Now, here's my conversation with Miguel Lopez. Miguel, I love that we get the chance to sit down and have this conversation. I've known you for a few years now. I think the first time we met was an interview we did a few years back with Just Communities of Arkansas. And I've known ever since then kind of your involvement in the community, and you've been a part of a lot of boards and things. And I mean, I got to admit, you're not that old. To be doing all the things you're doing. So I'd love to just jump in with, you know, give me kind of your background. How did you get involved in all these things, and where are you at right now?
Yeah, so I was actually, I was born in Mexico, as my name will give it away. And my parents had some businesses in there, and we were doing pretty well. And then like 94, the economy just tanked, and my parents were, they just didn't want to be there anymore. So they literally sold everything they had and uprooted our family to, you know, to the U.S. in search of the coveted American dream. And I was about two or three at the time. And we landed in California at first. And my parents didn't really like it. And we had an aunt that still lives in Sherwood, Arkansas to this day. And, you know, I think in life we can always pinpoint those moments that were just, you know, pivotal in your life. And for me, that's one of them. When that aunt said, you should try Arkansas. You know, we didn't know where it was, didn't have any connections except that aunt. And we moved here, and it was the best thing that my parents could have ever done for us, because Central Arkansas has been a dream for us. And moreover, every dream I've ever had, Central Arkansas has helped realize it for me. And I say all that to say, you know, my wanting to get involved, it's kind of my way of giving back. You know, my mom always said our rent in this world is service to others. And you take where I come from and what Central Arkansas has given me and my family, I almost kind of feel like an indentured servant, right? So I'm always finding ways to kind of plug and play and help out wherever I can. And that's why I've just kind of always been involved, because to me, it's not only fun, but it's a good way of finding yourself is through service I've found, and just to give back to this community that's given us so much.
That's awesome. So What's your career path been to this point? How have you kind of made your way to now being, you know, a vice president at a bank?
Yeah, you know, I never thought I'd be in banking. When I first got into banking, I jokingly said the only qualification I had to be a banker was that I had a bank account. And I just never really didn't know what, I didn't know any bankers. At the time, I was working for the Chamber of Commerce doing economic development, and I loved it. And I had a friend that reached out and said, hey, you know, we're looking to hire, you know, a guy that could do X, Y, and Z. And I just so happened to fit those molds. And I said, man, I've never thought about banking. And then as, you know, learned more about it, I realized that banking is just a super rewarding career, because you're helping people with some of the most sensitive issues in their life, right? Their finances. And once I did it, and I was at First Community at first and loved it, and then had the good fortune of hearing about Encore and the work that they're doing, and I just jumped at the chance to be part of Team Encore and kind of help provide a true community kind of boutique bank feel to Central Arkansas and some of the other regions we're going into.
I mean, everybody's got a bank account, and everybody sort of chooses a bank based on certain criteria that maybe it's the one closest to their house, maybe it's the one they know somebody that works at, or they like the colors of the logo the most. Who knows why people choose their
bank
account.
Or they give them a toaster, right?
That's right, exactly. So talk about your role there and how that helps kind of develop this sense of community banking.
So my title is a Chief Community Outreach Officer, and effectively what that means for me is I'm kind of the guy that's out in the community waving the flag for the bank, but more importantly, kind of hearing the needs and the wants of the community and then relaying those back to the C-suite of the bank to say, hey, here's some things we can be doing. And a lot of what I'm really passionate about is helping the unbanked and the underbanked. You know, for someone like yourself, I'm sure it's never dawned on you to not have a bank account, right? Your parents had one. They opened you a checking account when you were a little kid. You've always had a bank account. Well, there's a large portion of Americans that don't have a bank account. They keep their money cash, or they go to cash checking places. And it's actually a detriment to them, because if you ask them why they don't have a bank account, more often than not, they'll say, I can't afford it, right? They think it costs money. But in reality, it costs them more not to have a bank account, because every time they get their check cash, they're paying fees, right? Or every time they go get a loan, instead of going to their banker, they go to the payday loan guy, and it's super expensive. And that's something that's really near and dear to my heart, because growing up Hispanic American, my parents really didn't have a bank account, right? Of course, when we moved here, we didn't have two nickels to rub together, so we didn't really need a bank account. But what I realized was, you know, I saw how I grew up and how my friends grew up, and I saw there was a huge disconnect between the banks and the communities that they should be outreaching. And that's kind of been my rally cry for the past couple of years, to say, hey, we as a bank, we're going to make a concerted effort to reach out to this demographic to let them know a couple of things. One, we want your business, right? We want your trust, and we want to be your partner. And I think you have to do all those three things in unison. And the more I saw it, the key to upward mobility in America is you have to have a strong financial partner, be it your bank or your credit union, preferably your bank and preferably Encore Bank. But you need that strong bank in your corner so that you can come in and say, hey, I want to buy a car, right? Or I want to buy a house. And it's no secret that the easiest and fastest way for Americans to build generational wealth is through home ownership. Well, if you don't have a bank account, or if you're not monitoring your credit, it's going to be really hard for you to do that. And unfortunately, that disproportionately affects communities of color, black and brown. So in my role, as to answer your question more directly, that's kind of what my role is, right? To help and kind of be the eyes and ears for the bank and go out in the community and kind of be a bridge more so than anything between both communities.
I love that. And I think for you personally, you've taken it on as a mission to sort of blend that professional career and your personal agenda of service to others, and how do you do that in the community? And so, like I said, you're on several boards that I know of, and that comes from your dedication to being a servant and a servant leader. And so how do you kind of mix the two into your everyday world?
That's a great question. You know, part of me being in this role is to be out in the community and letting them know that, you know, Encore Bank's here to help and we want to be a partner. And you know, I love serving on those boards because it allows me to do two things, right? It allows me to give back to the community, but it also allows me to be out there and press and flesh with some of the most influential people in the city, which, you know, doesn't hurt, from a business development standpoint. So that's kind of the way I do it. But also, it's just, you know, I think if you look at any community in America, right, I think they have a couple things, right? They have either a big university, a public university, they've got hospitals, and they've got a strong bank. If a community doesn't have either of those three things, they're going to be in real trouble real soon. And I think the good thing about Little Rock is we've got tons of really good banks, right? And I think Encore is at the top of that list. So how do we continue to be top of mind for people so that when they have a question or a concern, they can reach out to us and we can start building some true, meaningful relationships?
I love it. I think the first time we met was through this project with Just Communities of Arkansas, which, you know, I think right now in 2020, we've got a lot of things to talk about. One of the biggest ones is diversity and inclusion. And we did a project a few years ago that talked about all the same things. And that's something you've been passionate about. So talk me through sort of what that looks like for you as a Hispanic American and someone who has made it their job to include people who are oftentimes, unfortunately, left out of the conversation.
Yeah. I'll start with a real quick story on why I like to do what I do and be as visible as I can. You know, I get asked to go speak at high schools quite often for career day, and something I relish now. And one particular day, this was actually a middle school. I was there and I was talking about career day, and that day, of course, it's pre-COVID, so I had a suit and tie and the whole jazz. And I'm talking about, you know, why I love banking and my job. And this Hispanic kid in the front row just shoots his hand up in the air. And he goes, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Well, you know, I live in Sherwood, or I live in West Little Rock, but, you know, I'm Mexican," which is what he was getting at, what he asked. And he looked at me like I was lying. He's like, "No, you're not." And I said, "Yeah, I am." And he starts talking to me in Spanish as if to catch me in some elaborate lie. So, boom, I hit him with my Spanish. And he's just like, "Whoa." And I said, "Why don't you believe that I'm Mexican?" And he said, "Mexicans don't wear suits to work." And, man, that hit me hard. And I just looked at him and said, "You get a good education. You can wear whatever you want to work. Lab coat, hard hat, suit, tie, whatever." I said, "Your limitations are only the ones you set to yourself." And as I was driving home, it just hit me how just you can't be what you can't see. And maybe that kid never thought he could be a banker because he never saw himself wearing a suit. Or he probably never seen anyone in his family wear a suit. Now that he did, I'd like to think that maybe he's, you know, his horizons have broadened a little bit. And for a lot of people, candidly, I'm the only Hispanic they know. So it's kind of like a pressure that I put on myself to always put my best foot forward. Because especially now, it's no secret that, you know, hate crimes towards Hispanic Americans have increased substantially over the past couple of years for reasons I think we all know. So that's something that I'm always cognizant of. You know, if I'm the only Hispanic person that Nate knows, I have to, you know, talk, you know, really well, and I have to dress really well, and I have to be on my best behavior. It's probably an unfair pressure that I put on myself, but I do it anyway, because I think that's how you change hearts and minds of folks, especially. But I say all that living in, you know, in the deep South, and saying earlier that it's been, you know, the best thing for my family. And I think that's somewhat of a cognitive dissonance here in the last couple of years on that. But that's why I'm so passionate about it, because I know firsthand that it's just important for people to see. And moreover, you know, being on all these boards, I think one of the reasons that I get asked to be on them is because I provide a different lens than a lot of them, right? I'm a first generation American. I'm an immigrant. English is my second language. I just bring so many different lenses that candidly make us a stronger board. Because if you have 12 people in the room from the exact same background, exact same college, you kind of get stale ideas, right? And there's tons of data that shows that the more different the room, the different the ideas are going to be. And I think we live in a world where we want different ideas. We want different perspectives, because that's what provides, you know, really deep and meaningful conversations.
I love that. And I know there's not it's a very complex problem to solve with some of the things going on in our country. I think we've seen a lot of positive movement and progress. But from the chair you sit in, being out in the community, seeing so many different vantage points and having a unique perspective to speak to, what do you see is a step forward? How do we continue to move towards equality and everything kind of feeling more equal than I think a lot of times it is? Yeah.
You know, I think we've made some strong headway in that. And I see that when I'm in boardrooms that are, you know, pale, male, and stale, and they look at me and they say, "We've got a diversity problem," right? And when they say that, it's like, wow, if they're starting to get it, that's a huge bonus for us. And I think it's incumbent upon folks like myself that are privileged to be in that room and have that said to them, to say, okay, how can we help them out? How can we help diversify their board? How can we bring different ideas? And diversity isn't just, you know, black and brown. It's also income. It's also shared experiences. It's also demographics. So I think that's one of the ways that we do that, is when someone reaches out and says, "Hey, you know, we've got a diversity problem," first just congratulate them for realizing that. Because for a lot of folks, it's a tough pill to swallow, right? Some people were, you know, as one of my buddies says, that they were born on third and thought they hit a triple. And for them, it's hard to kind of realize that, you know, a lot of what you have is just by virtue of who your parents were. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you should be proud of that. But if you have a position of power and you're in a place where you can bring systematic change, I think you should make every effort to do so.
Mm, that's powerful. Sometimes I evaluate my own circumstances and want to feel like I have a well-rounded point of view, because I grew up in a town called Plano, Texas, which on almost every list, it's one of the top five cities in America to raise a family, you know, gross income. It's just one of the those cities that just is pretty much where everybody wants to feel like they're from. And I went to a high school that had a lot of diversity to it. I mean, people of every race, every ethnicity, and I felt like I had a good understanding of the world because of the fact that I grew up in that environment. But then as I've obviously become an adult and traveled and done all these things, you realize, well, just because I was around people of a certain race or people that thought differently than me doesn't mean that I still didn't have certain privileges that they didn't. But I didn't realize that at the time. And it took me a while to even acknowledge that. Like you were saying, the acknowledgement is the first piece of it, especially when it comes to the business world. I think we have a lot of work to do still.
Definitely.
When I talk to people and you know, you have a position to fill and you're looking at resumes, I would like to think people aren't looking for race or age or gender. But I think a lot of times there's probably certain positions based on the company culture, the community, the client base, where those things become a factor. How do we eliminate those factors?
That's a great question. You know, to your example on your high school experience, that's what the huge, that's the main difference between diversity and inclusion, right? And the best example that I can give is you get a glass of milk, right? And you add chocolate syrup, right? That's diversity, right? But if you don't stir it, all the chocolate milk just stays at the bottom and all the milk stays at the top, right? So you're diverse, but you're not inclusive. It's not chocolate milk until you get the spoon and you stir it up and then you make chocolate milk. That's where the inclusion comes in, right? So going to a high school that's diverse is great, but you know, it's saying, hey, I want to go make friends with the Hispanic kids, or hey, I want to go make friends with the African-American kids. That's really where you get the beauty of it, I think. I mean, just imagine, some of my best friendships are with folks that come from way different backgrounds than I am. Of course, that's easy for me to say, because no one really has a background that, I mean, not as many people have the background that I come from. But in the business community, you're 100% right. You know, I've had folks that say, well, I've tried to hire minorities, but I can't ever get them. Like, where do you put it at? Well, you know, I tell people at my country club, or I tell them that, and I'm like, well, man, you're in the wrong place, right? Or, you know, you just have to have more intentionality behind that, right? You have to, much like in my role, you know, I can't just sit in my office and expect for the Hispanic community to come bank with me just because I'm Hispanic. I've got to go out there and pound the pavement and press the flesh and let them know that I want their business. The same way an employer should do is say, hey, I want to hire a more diverse workforce, right? But you just got to get out of the office and be involved in the community, but also reach out to friends that you know that have those. Because I think one of the biggest beauties of Little Rock is that as a city, we're big enough to be a metropolitan city, but we're still small enough to have that small hometown feel. And that's one of the things that I've benefited substantially from, that is, you know, you do right by one person and they'll let their friend know, and the next thing you know, you've got more friends than you can ever imagine. And I think that's how you, in the business world, that's how you do it. You just have to have more intentionality behind it. And I give up the first time, right? If you have a position and you, but to your point, right, you want to make sure you hire the most qualified person, regardless of skin tone and color. But you can't just get away with it by putting it on LinkedIn and hoping that, you know, you have applicants of color that apply, knowing that, you know, that might not be the best place for them. I'm not saying it's not, but you just have to try different things.
I love it. So talking about sort of advancement, where things are going, what are some things that you've seen sort of shift and change, especially amid COVID right now? You know, I mean, obviously, we were talking off camera a minute ago about funny little memes that are out there, and the things that change the world faster than anything may not be somebody's innovative thoughts and ideas. It's a global pandemic and it forces us to be more technological. But there's pros and cons to that, because especially if you're talking about people who have never banked before, now you add technology to the mix and they may not have access to that technology. So what are some of the things that you've seen from an advancement standpoint, where the industry is going that you are involved in? And then what challenges does that present on top of it?
That's a great question. You know, I harken back to this great quote by Charles Darwin, who said, it's not the smartest that survive. It's not the strongest that survive. It's the ones that are most willing to adapt. And I think that is still true today, even more so back then. and especially as it relates, you know, to COVID, right? And I say that being a banker in an industry that historically moves at the speed of smell, right? I mean, we're risk averse by nature. We're conservative. I've got customers that still balance their checkbook, and God love them. But and I think that's one of the beauties of being at Encore right now is, you know, when we all kind of got together, and as we hire, we are intentional about hiring folks that don't say things like, we've always done it this way, or that's how I've learned to do it. We're intentional on hiring folks that want to think outside the box and want to genuinely provide something that isn't out there. And, you know, our slogan is, you know, building something better. And we genuinely believe that we can. And I think COVID was a prime example of that, right? And I think it was a stress test to our model to see, you know, if it worked. But that was one of the beauties of it is here comes this pandemic, came out of nowhere, and now we've got to respond to it. And I think one of the best examples I can give you is PPP, right? We were able to fund 100% of the applications we received from PPP, which kept about 1,100 Arkansans on the payroll. And that's what gets me excited every morning is being able to be there for our customers and our community. It genuinely felt at the beginning of it like we were economic first responders, right? You had businesses calling you saying, hey, what's this PPP deal? How do I apply? Do I have to pay it back? I'm about to lay off these people if I can't get this loan. It's a lot of pressure on a banker, right? Which historically everything moves slow and you dot your I's and cross your T's. And then this happened and like we've got to learn about it. We've got to inform our customers and then we got to get them the funding. But I think our team handled it exceptionally well by the metrics that I've stated. And that to me is what banking's all about. You know, I always tell folks, you know, as a smaller, more boutique bank, we're not going to be in every corner. We don't want to be. But we're going to be in your corner if you call us. And I think during the pandemic that we were able to prove that to a lot of folks.
That's great. And 100% funded is monumental. I mean, I know that early on there were a lot of complaints from business owners saying we can't get the funding we need to be able to continue, you know, paying our people, which is most important. But I know a lot of banks did a great job of really fighting for their customers. But it was such a challenging situation because, again, nobody had ever faced it. And I think the people that really rose to the top were the ones that had great leadership behind them. So from a leadership perspective, you know, being in the C-suite of the bank yourself and having strong leaders around you, what are some of the things that stand out as far as how you guys really move ahead and take care of your customers?
Yeah, you know, I think one of those is just being open to new ideas, right? If you look at bank, I would venture to say banking in the last 5 years has changed more than it did in the last 100 years. Like I said earlier, you have to have leaderships that are okay with saying, I don't know, right? Or I don't know, but let's hire someone that can help us implement that. And that was one of the beauties of us at Encore is our C-suite. I mean, you've got three of the sharpest bankers in the state, Chris Roberts, Philip Jett, and Bert Hicks. And, you know, I was super comfortable where I was prior, but it wasn't until I met with them and sat down and they kind of shared with me their vision and mission for the bank and what Encore could be that I was like, sign me up. You know, let's do some good for the community and grow. But I think some of the characteristics is, you know, being open to new ideas, not being scared to take risk, right? Which it's counterintuitive to everything a banker does, because what I always tell people is, yeah, bankers are risk averse, but we're never going to take a risk because that's what a loan is. It's always a risk. You just have to, you know, monitor it safe and soundly. And I think we just have to apply those same principles to adapt in new technologies, right? One of the things that we're focusing on now is online account openings, right? You know, I think the days of folks going over to your corner branch and, you know, opening a bank account and getting a coaster or a toaster or whatever, those days are long gone. I think folks want just quick, instant account access, and we're doing everything we can to make sure that we provide that for the customers that want it.
Well, I mean, my single business mantra is just be easy to do business with. Yeah. And I think especially now, more than ever before, that means don't put a bunch of paperwork in front of me. Don't make me come do something at a certain time.
Don't call a 1-800 number.
Exactly.
I was talking with a customer or a potential customer at the time, and he said, what's your customer service like? What his main concern was. And I said, man, you're looking at it. You've got my cell phone. You call me. And that's when he was kind of like, whoa, you know, because he'd come from a big bank that, you know, he didn't have a relationship, and he'd call a 1-800 number. And this is a big time guy. And for me to just say to him, call me, what, text me, what do you need? We'll do it for you. I think that was kind of a wow factor for him.
That's awesome. When you think about your own growth and development, what are some things you do to stay sharp and kind of improve yourself?
That's a good question. You know, I think there's kind of a dual prong to that. There's a professional and the personal, and I don't think they're mutually exclusive. But personally, I make sure that I take care of my body. And that sounds stupid, but I think it's so important to exercise daily, to have a good diet, to meditate and to sleep well. You want to be physically there every day, right? Every day you wake up, you know, I like feeling good. I like being alert. I like being attentive. I also like to just stay up to date with, you know, with anything that's going on in the banking world, right? So I read, there's a great website for all the bankers out there called The Financial Brand, and it just has these current up-to-date banking articles. I'm also constantly reading a book. Because to me, it's kind of a, I think overall well-being is a three-legged stool, right? Your spiritual well-being, whatever that is for someone, whether it's, you know, religious or not. Your mental well-being, right? You want to be mentally healthy. And your physical well-being, right? And I think, at least I personally, try to every day exercise those three, whether it's praying in the morning workout, reading a book at night. You're constantly exercising those things. Because one of the things that I think a lot of folks don't realize is that success isn't a big, you know, big yeehaw moment. I think success is boring. It really is. It's incremental good habits that you do daily. And that's not going to sell a lot of books. It's not going to be sexy to say, hey, all you have to do is do this every single day of the rest of your life. What people want, I've seen, is they want, you know, the magic pill. Hey, if you do this one thing, Nate, this one thing only, you're going to be successful. That's what they're looking for. In high school, my high school football coach was my history teacher, because, you know, it's the South and that's how that works. And he said, Lopez, I swear, he said, Lopez, you're Mexican, right? And I said, yes, sir. He goes, can you kick? And I said, is the Pope Catholic? He said, you're such a smart ass. Come try out for the football team. We need a kicker. Our kicker had just graduated. I've never touched the football to this point, right? I'm Mexican. I play soccer. But to his point, as stereotypical as it was, he was right. I could kick. And I showed up to practice, and I wasn't great. And I told him, I said, Coach, I'm no good. I'm not great. He said, I don't need you to be good. I need you to be consistent. And for whatever reason, that stuck with me, because I was never a great kicker, but I was consistent. I couldn't kick a 50-yard field goal, but I could hit it down the uprights every time for the extra point. That's what he was wanting. And I say that to say, in life, that's what people value the most, is consistency, right? I don't care if you can do one good podcast, Nate. I want you to do 50 good podcasts. And I think that's one of the things in life that's helped me, is just you have to be consistent, right? You always have to be, you know, even if it's a bad day, or even if I don't want to work out, or even if I don't want to read, just have to be consistent. Because as the old quote goes, water cuts through a rock, not because of its power, but because of its consistency. And I think that's, you know, kind of my main takeaway.
Yeah. And it goes to the same mantra of everything's a marathon, not a sprint, yeah. Right? I mean, you think about somebody running a marathon. If they hit mile 15, success to them may be mile 16, but they haven't crossed the finish line. They're just looking at that one next thing. Whereas a sprinter, I mean, 10 seconds, your race is over, and now what, you know?
I did a half Ironman 2 years ago, and I just randomly woke up one day. I'm always trying to set, like, goals for myself, and I had just graduated from my undergrad. I was about to start grad school, and I wanted something to keep me hot and bothered in between, because that's how I operate. You know, people say, I went on a one-month vacation. I'm like, man, after, like, 4 days, I need something to stress me out. I don't know what it is. So I signed up for this Ironman, and I get to Chattanooga. And literally, the moment I jumped in that river, I wanted to get out. I mean, it's like that Mike Tyson quote, everyone's got a plan till they get punched in the mouth. Wham! I mean, it hit me. And I was like, I didn't drive 8 hours to just get out of this river. So I swam and almost died in the river, but got out. The bike was fine because I'm a cyclist and I love that. And then but I got a little too aggressive on the bike. And when I started doing the running portion, the half marathon, literally the moment I got off my bike, both of my hamstrings just gave out. I mean, I had cramped and I was on my knees, and some volunteer comes up behind me and throws table salt in my mouth and literally just pushed me. And I'm surprised I didn't just fall on my face. And I just walked I mean, I, you know, my, which was frustrating thing, my cardio was great. I could have ran it. My legs had given out. And I literally walked a half marathon, which is the most embarrassing thing, but I didn't give up. And what I loved about that is, you know, I think anyone, people get impressed when I say I did a half Ironman. And to me, it's really not impressive because anybody could do it. I mean, if your life depended on it, Nate, you would find a way. But it's doing it when your life doesn't depend on it that I think is impressive, right? When you have no reason to do it, but the fact that you've set that goal. And I thought about that every step of those 13 miles. I was like, man, nah, I should just quit. And I'm like, you're not going to quit.
When it goes back to the interconnectedness you mentioned of the mental, the physical, and the spiritual, because, you know, your physical's done, right? I mean, literally your body didn't want to go any further, but the mind, you had trained your mind strong enough to say, you know what, we're going to make this body do what we want it to do.
I never thought about it that way, but yeah, you're 100% right. Cause you know, those three things are, I like to think, well balanced on my end, and one of those gears gave out, but the other two were still there. And it's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. Well, and we just had Brian Mears on the podcast, CEO of Alleviant Health Centers. And he talks about, you know, the interconnectedness of those three things and how a lot of times when it comes to people going for mental health treatment, kind of the old way of doing it is we're just going to prescribe you a pill and you might talk to somebody and we're just going to treat that mental piece, but we're going to forget about the physical and spiritual, even though it's all connected. So we've got to look at all three in order to fix the one.
Man, that's so important right now. You know, right now with COVID, it's no secret, you know, the media tells you you need to wear a mask, which is great, and you should. The media tells you you need to socially distance, which is great, and you should. But what's frustrating for me is they're not telling you, you need to exercise more. You need to eat better. You need to get outside and get some vitamin D. They're not telling you those three things. And not to sound like a conspiracy theorist or anything, but there's the data shows that if your BMI is like 42% or higher and you get COVID, it's not going to be good, right? So if you know that, why don't you rectify that, right? And it's easy for me to say because I love to work out, but that's one of the things that I've started doing in light of COVID. I went vegan about 3 months ago just because there's tons of research that shows that your immune system's better, your metabolism system's better. And if you've got this disease that debilitates those three things, why not get on the attack and boost it up so that if and when I do get COVID, right, hopefully I'm either asymptomatic or I just get a mild head sore and I'm fine and I'm not on a breathalyzer. Now, I could get it and die from it, right? But so can anybody. At least I'm going to do is do what I can on my end. And I think that if you look at in America versus other countries, 42% of Americans are overweight versus China, 6% of Chinese are overweight. So that's something that I think that's why, unfortunately, it's hit us so bad is because as a country, we're just so unhealthy. And I always pride people in that take good care of their health because, you know, your body's your vessel. It's so important. It's the one body you get, you know, take care of it. But also if you expect, you know, to do a lot of things and to be a high producer, you've got to have a well-oiled machine. It's like a race car, right? If you want to win that race, well, you better get the oil changed. You better gas it up. You better keep the tires nice and threaded. It's the same with your body.
Yeah, and all back to that same point. Oftentimes our weight, our health, our physical well-being is directly related to our mental well-being. You know, if we want to be in shape, we just have to do the things to make it happen. It's not a physical thing as much as it is a mental thing.
Well, and you know what's so funny, especially with COVID, you know, they shut down the gyms for a while, and I'm a guy that goes to the gym just about every day. And then I started thinking, I was like, I don't need the gym, right? You know, do 50 air squats and see if that's not a workout, or do 100 push-ups at the house. And I think one of the good things, I think, in light of one of the silver linings, rather, of all this is I think a lot of people are starting to get out more, right? I mean, you go ask any bike shop in town and they can't keep them on the shelves because I think folks are just craving social interaction in a socially distant way, but also they're just craving to get out of the house and stretch their legs. And I think if it means more bike sales and more people are using the bike trails, then that's a silver lining for sure.
And that brings me to another point, and that is the people we surround ourselves with help us be who we want to be. You know, they say you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And you've mentioned a lot about the things you do to take care of yourself physically, you know, the people you're around on a professional level. So talk to me a little bit about some of the people in your life, some of the titans in your world that, you know, you kind of look up to and that help influence your day to day.
Man, the first and foremost at the top of any list is my mom. I'm a huge mama's boy. But to her credit, she is the best mom in the world. And she would always tell me this growing up in Spanish. She would say, dime con quien andas y te diré quien eres, which in English translates to, tell me who you're hanging out with and I'll tell you who you really are. And I've always thought about that, right? And in high school, when I had friends that started getting into drugs or starting doing stupid stuff, I just cut them out of my life. Because that's not who I am, and that's not who I wanted to be. And to my mom's point, that's not who I wanted to be associated with. But to answer your question more directly, I realized really early in life, growing up as an immigrant with no social capital, that it's really important to know people and to pick a good mentor. And I'll give you one really funny example. The very first time I got to meet President Clinton was at a fundraiser here in town. And I, for whatever dumb luck on my end, I knew the guy who was hosting the fundraiser, so I got to be invited, but as a volunteer. And you know, they're divvying out the volunteer task, and I'm no idiot. I want to connect with these people, right? I'm a nobody. I know that, but I don't want to die a nobody. And they were giving out the task, and I wanted the one that would get me the most FaceTime with somebody. And they're like, who wants to drive the golf cart? Boom, I shot my hand up, right? My job that day was to drive this golf cart in this huge house and drive the guests, right? So that, to me, I was like, I get FaceTime with these movers and shakers. I was like 18. And as fate would have it, one of those was President Bill Clinton. So here was one of those pinch me moments, right? Here's an immigrant from Mexico that had no reason to be here driving one of the presidents, of the former president of the United States, to this event. And I guess by virtue of where I was that night, he thought, you know, I was somebody. And he shakes my hand and he goes, who are your parents? And I was starstruck. I was like, they're nobody, sir. I didn't know what to say to him because, you know, I thought he was expecting me to say, oh, they're Jimmy Bob who ran your gubernatorial campaign in 84. I was like, they're nobody. And he was like, huh? And I was like, oh, I'm an immigrant. I'm just volunteering. I got super nervous. I don't even know what I said, but it was something along the lines of, you wouldn't know him. And he said, well, tell him I said, hey. But it was that day when I left that I was like, man, it's super important in life to be around people that can mentor you and can value you and can help guide you. And a lot of the biggest breaks I've had in my life are by virtue of people that I knew. So to answer your question, my mom is the first one, right? Because she's my North Star. I talked to her 4 times a day, and she's just really gave me a sound foundation for my life and kind of helped keep the train between the tracks. But also I've got two really good close friends of mine, Wade Radke, who is a mentor and a friend, and then Sam Carrasquillo. And to your point, we know all three of us come from very diverse upbringings. Three of us are brown. The three of us, they're entrepreneurs. I'm a banker, so I deal a lot with small businesses and entrepreneurs. And I just love the bond and the fellowship that we have because we constantly push each other, right? They push me to make better, you know, business ideas, and I push them to make better health ideas. I mean, we all kind of just feed off each other. And it's a beautiful thing to have someone that, you know, you're not related to. There's really nothing connecting you there but that fellowship and that bond. And those are folks that just kind of keep me grounded but also lift me up when I need it. And in the banking world, I just think the world of, you know, my colleagues at Encore Bank, the team we're building is just really impressive. When I first joined Encore Bank, I got a call from one of my friends. And she said, I heard you just joined Encore. And I said, yeah, they made a mistake and hired me. And she said, you guys are building the Avengers of banking, is what she said. And I think it's before I joined that she thought that. But I kind of was taken aback, and I was like, you're right, we are, because we're literally picking the ones we think are going to do the best job as opposed to just filling a position, right? And we've got a couple positions that we just haven't filled because we haven't found the person that we're like, yes, take that ball and run with it. So those are some of the titans in my life. But more than anything, my mom, for sure, because she's just the best person ever.
I love it. So what do you guys see coming next? What's on the big to-do list? What goals do you have personally that you want to achieve that, you know, you've kind of set for yourself?
So I think professionally the goal is, you know, we're getting ready to expand into some newer markets, bigger markets. We're going to be in Fort Worth here soon. So professionally, I want to make sure I do right and earn my keep and can do good in those markets. And then personally, I'm always just setting new goals. I want to do another Ironman. Which is sounds stupid, but I need something to work towards. I'm in banking school right now, which I've got 2 more years of that, so I hope to finish that and graduate with honors. And a lot of that is just continue doing what I'm doing. Just continue to be involved in the community, continue to be active and invest in my personal and professional health.
And we've talked a little bit about, you know, the fact that you're on some boards around town. Talk to me about some of those boards. What are you doing to help with those organizations?
So I'll start, and I'll preface by saying that when I pick to join a board, it really has to be something that's really near and dear to my heart. I don't want to get on a board just because, you know, it's a good board to be on. If I'm not passionate about it, I'm not really going to be a good board member. And when I take on the board member responsibility, I take it full on. I mean, I live, eat, and breathe it and drink the Kool-Aid because that's just who I am as a person, right? I like to wave the flag. And I'll start with the one that we're at right now, which is Arkansas Repertory Theater. I love the arts. You know, I think of all the art platforms, I think theater is the most impactful. I think it's the most deep. I think the reason we as humans gravitate to arts is because it helps us answer that age-old question, right, of what is it to be human? Why am I here? And I think when you're in the theater, you see those, you know, incredible professionals on stage acting out, it almost transcends you like no other medium has, right? And it helps you for that one instant in time make you feel the most human, right? Because the stage isn't big, right? It's not big at all, but the trip they take you on is, right, it's impossible to quantify. And I don't think there's a lot of platforms that allow you to do that. And when I was asked to join the rep board, I was tickled to death to do it because I believe so much in the theater. But also we talked about, you know, big cities, and I think every major city has to have a strong theater to really be proud of itself, right? If your community can support and keep a theater alive, it says a lot about your community. It says that you guys care about the arts and that it's a pretty cultured city. And the rep is, you know, the main theater as I see it, right? And there's some other great local theaters, but to me, the Bell Cal of Little Rock is this beautiful facility that we're in with, you know, Will Trice at the helm, who I introduced you earlier, and he's won 3 Tonys. I mean, how lucky are we to have a local guy run our theater that happens to have, you know, three Tonys if you need it. So that's one. And then another one that I'm super passionate about right now is Goodwill of Arkansas. We recently, this about 3 years ago, started the first and only adult high school. And this is huge. It's not a GED program. It's an actual high school. Our students range from 19 to 67 years old. And I'll share you one story. The very first graduation we did, we had 6 graduates. It was at Philander Smith College. And we were, you know, I'd kind of gotten to know the students because of, you know, I'm on the board and they give us an update. And as one of the graduates was walking across the stage, she's a single mom of 3 kids. And by happenstance, her 3 kids were right behind me. And as she's walking across the stage, man, those 3 kids got up and started yelling, "Go, mommy," just super proud. And next thing you know, I'm bawling. I mean, I don't know her well, I don't know these kids, but I'm crying because the generational impact that we just had on this family, right? Those kids, because they saw their mom graduate, are more likely than ever to graduate from high school because their mom did. In fact, there's data to back that up. And now she can go and get a higher paying job to then provide for these kids. And that's when I became some sort of a zealot about this program, because I think it's like 15% of Arkansans don't have a high school diploma, right? And if you look at your earning capacity versus having one and not having one, it's huge. And we already live in a pretty poor state. So we've had 3 graduations so far. One of our students went from making $9 an hour to making $20 an hour like that, just because she had a high school diploma. She bought a house. So I'm super proud of the work that we're doing at Goodwill, because we also have a reentry program where we hire folks that are coming out of prison and coming out of jail, giving them a second shot at life. Because I think one of the most humane things we can do is give people another chance, right? We all make mistakes. And when you listen to their stories on how they ended up in jail and how they ended up from dropping out of high school, Nate, that could have been you and I, man. I mean, just dumb luck. The water broke in our favor and we didn't have the upbringing they did, or we didn't get caught with a knucklehead friend that ended up having a bunch of cocaine on them. That wasn't our story. It's their story. But just because that's the story they came from doesn't mean that's how they're going to end up. And we're working right now to get some money from the state to expand. Our goal is to hopefully have about 4 to 6 of these schools across the state. We've got one in Little Rock. We want to open one in Northwest Arkansas, South Arkansas. And that's kind of my next big project, is to do everything I can to make sure that I'm being a good board member. I happen to be the chair this year, so it's got a lot more pressure. But I'm just so passionate about that, because I wouldn't be where I'm at today, Nate, if it wasn't for the education that I got, right? I mean, it was just dumb luck that I happened to go to a really good high school, Seven Hills High School, and that UALR was a stone's throw from where I grew up. Just dumb luck. I mean, I'd like to say it's because I'm smart and I deserve it. No, it's just dumb luck that my parents moved to that city. And when it was time to go to college, I just went to the closest one because I didn't want to leave home. I couldn't. I was helping support my family. And I just went to a world-class university, right? And I got a great education, met some good folks in the capital city. And that's why I'm so passionate about it. And my goal is to make sure that I can do everything in my power to help them out as much as I can.
Awesome. I love it. Well, keep up the good work. You're definitely making a huge difference. Want to move into some quick hit, rapid fire questions. First is one that I asked the governor last week. Netflix or the news?
I'm a big news guy. Yeah, I just, to a fault, right? I should turn it off and just, well, what I do is I put the news on and I mute it and then I read a book. So then I'm flipping pages. I just look up and see how the world's falling apart currently.
That leads us to our next one. What is the best or latest book you've read?
The best one that I've read lately, it's kind of an old book by now, but I just can't put it down. It's called Leadership by Doris Kearns Goodwin. She's a phenomenal historian, and she profiles four great presidents, LBJ, FDR, Lincoln, and I can't think of the other one, and how they were just, how they dealt with very turbulent times and how leadership helped us get through that. And I think we're in a world now where we are desperately dying for sound and stable leadership at any level, whether it's the highest or the city level. And one of my favorite stories in that is Abraham Lincoln, who just has an amazing, amazing life story. And you know, he grew up poor. He grew up, son of a logger. But he knew that education was his ticket. And anytime I read books, I try to find someone that I connect with. And he knew that education was his ticket. And his English wasn't good because he was poor. And he found out, this is in the book, he found out that one of his neighbors 5 miles down the road had a thesaurus. And he walked 5 miles to borrow that book so that he could better his English. And then walked 5 miles back and gave it back. Now, Nate, I know some friends that have access to every book in the world on their phone and won't read. And Abe Lincoln walked 10 miles there and back to get one book. And I just love that story because I'm a big reader. But it just shows that, you know, as my mom always said, you know, those that can will always find a way. And he was definitely a guy that found a way.
It's awesome. What is part of your daily routine? What do you have to do every single day?
Man, I'm a creature of habit to a fault. I need to be more sporadic every now and again, but typically wake up around 5, and if the weather's good, I'll wake up and go ride my bike in the morning. If it's not, then I'll go to the gym and work out. Have a nice protein shake by like 7:30. I'm at the office by 8, work, and then after work, I'll usually go do something fun, whether it's tennis or golf or just ride my bike again. In the morning, it's not necessarily a workout. It's more of a mental workout, right? I don't have much time, so I just, if you work out first thing in the morning, your day starts on a whole nother level, right? You're just ahead of the game. And then at night, it's more kind of like, all right, let's actually get some good cardiovascular activity. And around 9 o'clock, I usually turn off, the TV, light a candle, and just read until I pass out. And sometimes it's 9:30, and sometimes it's 1 in the morning. It just depends on what I'm reading and what's on my mind.
In the age of COVID, people have altered their routines a little bit. Do you have any newly formed habits that you're either proud of or ashamed of?
Yeah, well, I told you I went vegan 3 months ago, so I'm super proud of that because I never thought I could do that. You know, if you look at the Mexican diet, it is very cheese and meat heavy. And my mom was like, what are you going to eat? And 3 months into it, I feel great. I don't have heartburn anymore. It's just an awesome thing. So I'm really proud of that. And I've just done a lot more stuff outside. You know, historically, I would just go to the gym because it's air conditioned and I got a bunch of friends there. But now I'm really starting to see just how beautiful our state is, right? I'm mountain biking a lot, so I'm going to these new trails that I'd never been before. So I'm proud of that.
Awesome. If you were to write a book, or put a billboard out with a message on it, what would it be?
Man, I would probably just say it gets better. You know, and just leave it at that. I look back at the life that I have now and the upbringing that I had, and it just feels like two different lives, Nate. I mean, it just, you know, I remember going to kindergarten. I remember my mom put me in the bus and just kind of saying, you know, have fun. And I didn't speak any English. And I just remember being mortified that, you know, I'm going to get to school, I'm not going to be able to communicate. And then I get to school, elementary, and the door opens and my ESL teacher is waiting right there for me. I mean, she didn't let me get off the bus. And just the elation that I felt, you know, that here she is just for me to help me out. And then she learned English and all that. And now I think of the life that I live, and it's just like, man, it just feels like two different lives. So I think that's my message. And, you know, I got bullied in high school because I was Mexican or because I had crooked teeth and all that. And, you know, right now bullying is so rampant. But I always tell any chance I get to the kids that are getting bullied, I'm like, man, it gets better, right? You know, don't confuse that temporary pain for permanent pain. And being bullied by someone that peaks in high school isn't the worst thing. Trust me, in 10 years, you're going to be better off than them. So that would be my message, because, you know, in life, I think pain is a beautiful thing. And that sounds like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. But when you're feeling pain, whether it's heartbreak or whether it's bullying or whether it's financial troubles, God, it makes you feel alive, right? It takes away the numbness of monotony. Right, because if nothing ever goes wrong, you almost kind of go stale, right? And sometimes it just takes a gut check, whether it's a heartache or something, to let you know, man, as bad as it is, I'm alive, and this is just part of the journey. And it's easier to say it when you're not going through it, but, you know, once you get on the other side of whatever that is, you realize that you're stronger for it. So that's kind of my message, right, was it gets better. Whatever that is that you're going through, it's going to get better. But you just have to process the pain.
Beautifully said. Favorite musician, favorite artist. When concerts come back, where are you going? Who are you going to see?
Man, I tell you what, that's a really good question. My favorite artists of all time are the Beatles. I think music peaked with those four guys, in particular Abbey Road or the White Album. And when Paul McCartney came the first go around, I was cheap and bought nosebleeds, right? I mean, I say cheap, they were expensive tickets. But man, I haven't been in a concert in so long. If he comes back, I'm paying whatever it is to be front row just to see Paul, you know, maybe one last time. Just because, and the Beatles, they had it right. Think of all the hits they had, and they never had a curse word in any of their songs. And all of their songs are about, you know, love. And I mean, their first song ever was I Want to Hold Your Hand. Think about that. I mean, just how naive these guys were. They made a love song about holding someone's hand, and you listen to the stuff nowadays. I sound like an old man, but you listen to the stuff nowadays, and it's like, well, we've come a long way since those hold your hand days.
I love it. And now you, this answer might have changed over the last few months, but favorite food, favorite restaurant, what do you have?
Man, that's a great question. So I recently went to the Preacher's Son in Northwest Arkansas and had the most amazing vegan dish I ever had. It was a roasted cauliflower with a chimichurri sauce. Quit it. It was so good. But my favorite local restaurant is probably Trio's. And, you know, Cappy's a dear, dear friend of mine. Her lobby is still closed, or her restaurant's still closed, but takeout's good. But, man, I yearn for the day when I can go back in the restaurant and see 100 people I know and break bread over some delicious food, and just to give Cappy a big old hug. So that's my favorite restaurant.
Well, it's coming soon enough. Any last thoughts? Any ways that you, any messages you want to put out there for anybody?
No, I want to thank you for the service that you're doing. I love the podcast. I love the guests. I think it's great how just super broad it is. You know, one day you're listening to the governor, and then the next day you're listening to a dumb banker like myself. So I think you do a good job of keeping it interesting. So just kudos to you, and I wish you success in everything you got coming.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Keep up the good work. You're definitely making a difference out there, and people are seeing that. So congrats to you on future 50 leaders of Arkansas.
Hey, likewise to you, man.
Appreciate that.
I heard they got to 49 and couldn't pick a 50. And then they called
and
me.
And that's where my name dropped in that.
They reached in the bottom of the barrel and said, Miguel Lopez, number 50.
Way. No way. Top of the list for sure. Well, Miguel, thanks so much. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Nate.
If you liked this episode of Titans of Industry, head to contenttitan.co/podcast for more episodes or subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. And if you know of an industry titan that's doing amazing things, let us know on social media or through our website so we can tell their story. Thanks for listening.